on the G&M Family Market phone line from the Boston Globe, Bob Ryan joining us. Bob, good Monday afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich.
NBA Finals. This was supposed to be such a terrific series, the third straight meeting between these two. What happened?
What happened is Kevin Durant's happened, and he's made as much a difference as you can imagine, and this is a worst-case scenario for the Cavaliers, although I have to say they did not put forth a representative effort in Game 1 at all. And in fact, there was even some hints that they should have been better prepared with the time off, that they appeared to be, can we believe it, and at this stage of the season, not in shape or not in good enough shape, certainly not in shape to run that night with the Warriors. They did play better last night, came out aggressively. LeBron took it to the basket for 8 baskets going to the hoop right away. And it appeared they were, and they were in it, and even in the late third. But after 2 games, it's just too much Durant.
I've been a lot of people suggesting some comparisons with this rivalry and the old Celtics-Lakers rivalry, be it the Bird Magic days, or even for those of us over a certain age, remembering those great matchups in the 1960s. Is it premature to put this rivalry in that same context?
I think that rivalry was in part due to the geography and the perceived, I underline the word, culture clash. There's nothing connecting or contrasting or in any way in joining Cleveland, Ohio, in the Bay Area. But Boston, L.A. Was a very cute, quaint storyline about lifestyle, climate, culture, etc., which enhanced that rivalry. And then there were, in the 60s, transcendent players, you know, Hall of Fame players all over the place, and they had the Weston Baylor, and Celtics had Russell and Cousy and Heinz, et cetera. Anyway, I it's getting there. We can reasonably assume that there might be another matchup, at least if not next year, over the next couple of years. So they're trying, but I just don't think it'll have the same overall resonance as the Celtics and the Lakers had.
Well, no, and when you look, I think it was, 7 times in 11 seasons from 1959 to 1969 that they met in the finals?
Yeah, they met 4 out of 5 and 6 out of 8, and it was seemed to be the only finals anyone remembers from the 60s. So, yeah, absolutely. And then in the 80s, it happened 3 times. One or the other was in the finals every year. It just there was no non-Boston or LA finals involved except there wasn't, not in a decade. So that came off the top of my head, I'm just running through my head very quickly. That was a different time, no question. But it's good. It's a rivalry, and 3 in a row has never been done, and it's a rubber match, which is the best part because they split the first 2.
Speaking of rivalries, the Red Sox and Yankees renew theirs tomorrow night, and it's not quite what it was a few years ago, but this Yankees team has been quite surprising with young Aaron Judge leading the way, and it's good for these two teams. Is it also good for baseball?
I think it's good for New York to have in New York. People here don't want to hear this, him down in New England, but it's very good for any league when a New York team is a centerpiece, and because it's a polarizing thing. Do people line up on either side, and it creates interest. And I'm glad to have the Yankees back, and it's new faces. Who's the perennial? You know who the perennial is here? That's funny, hard to believe. Brett Gardner, who just got his 1,000th
right.
Career hit, and he's not going to go to Monument Park. You're never going to have to go out there to see him. But he's putting up a. I'm trying to think of a Hank Bauer-ish career for the Yankees. How's that off the top of my head? But they don't have a signature right now player with Jeter's retirement. And the Red Sox do have one, but he's not playing, and that's, of course, Pedroia.
Chris Sale has certainly been off to a terrific start with his team, and there have been some comparisons drawn to at least the fan interest that was there when Pedro Martinez was in his heyday, and it's a little bit unfair to do that this early, but he is certainly creating some must-see baseball.
Yeah, you can, you're looking, first of all, you know, for the 10 Ks, he almost did it again. He started off pitching exceptionally well and didn't have the W's to show for it. And he's had a couple times now when he hasn't pitched as well and did get the W. And yesterday was a very interesting performance. It was a professional performance. The first inning was a combination of he wasn't that sharp, and he was certainly let down by circumstance, I would just be politely put it. And then he slammed the door, and the team fought back in the game and caught a colossal break with the throwing error, although I have to say that's a difficult throw that the catcher is forced to make with the base runner impeding his vision of third base, and anytime you have to make that throw, it's not that easy. And I think people should go easy on Pena for it. But it was an enormous benefit to the Red Sox, and it gave them the go ahead runs. So anyway, back to Sale. He's been terrific, and everything that they're paying for, and so I think they're very pleased with Chris Sale.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. I enjoy listening to your podcast every week, but last week's edition with you and the great Lee Montville sharing stories, that was just a classic.
Lee had some great ones because he's got the book out with my Ali, and he had a great Ali story and a Manute Bol, which I thought was a fascinating tale overall. And Lee has had some interesting experiences and a wide range of interest. And, of course, we ended up with talking about Evel Knievel. You can't do that with every writer.
That's right. That's right. Who's your guest on the podcast this week?
Well, we're taking a week off, and we're coming back next week with Richard Johnson, who is the curator of the New England Sports Museum. And I'm not being hyperbolic when I suggest that there may be no one alive who knows more about the Boston sports history than Dick Johnson. He keeps up. It's not as if he's just buried in the past at all. He's up. He's very au courant. He's a phenomenal San Francisco Giants fan. I'm going to have to indulge him with some Giants talk, and that'll be fine. Because I'm an old Giants fan myself from the old days. So anyway, Richard will. I think he'll have a very interesting viewpoint. I think people will enjoy it.
You had a wonderful piece in yesterday's paper honoring the late Frank DeFord. We were fortunate enough to have on the show here a couple of times, and you were pretty unabashed about your respect for him and the fact that you certainly looked up to him as a writer.
And as I find out in the past week, countless others. He may have gone to his grave having inspired more people in the last 40 years in their writing and of sports than any individual. And I think that's a very safe statement based on the reaction to Frank DeFord's death and the number of people who have come forth from all different walks of journalism to pay tribute to Frank. He meant a lot to me. I wanted to be him when I was 20, I'd say. It didn't work out. I wound up in newspaper rather than magazine, and it suited me very well. But a good thing I never would have been Frank DeFord, and we'll wait a while to see another one. But the two parts of it is that not only was he a phenomenal writer, but everyone liked him. Everyone, people that worked for him at the National say he's the best boss they ever had, and people, he was gracious and generous with his time, and just a wonderful companion and a suave, debonair figure. There's nobody quite like Frank DeFord.
No question about that. And as a couple of people have noted in the last several days, also changed the way that sports writers were treated, even financially. Even though the National was not a huge success in a financial standpoint, it ended up getting more money for writers along the way.
Well, that would be due to the guy who funded it. The Mexican billionaire who actually funded the paper. But getting Frank was a big step, and because he had Frank as his editor, Frank was able to attract a tremendous cast. The National was a artistic success, a financial failure, and the major problem that they never solved was distribution. They never solved it, and so it died to death after a year and a half, but not before it did some phenomenal work, and it was mourned, believe me, and Frank picked himself up naturally and was able to resume his career as if nothing happened. It was not catastrophic for him. No one ever viewed it as a setback or a failure. We understood that it was an excellent product, but the business aspect was too much to overcome.
We note another passing today, and one of the more interesting characters in the history of baseball, and particularly the Red Sox. Jimmy Pearsall died at the age of 87, and if nothing else, people should know he threw the ball a heck of a lot better than Anthony Perkins did.
Yeah, he was always upset because of the portrayal in the movie Fear Strikes Out that Perkins had no athletic ability and no baseball ability, could barely throw a baseball. Today that would never happen. When they cast the 42, they found an actor who could play. That they've had basketball movies where people could play. Woody Johnson, Woody Harrelson, help me out with the actor who played with him in The White Man Can't Jump. Wesley Snipes. But anyway, Jimmy Pearsall, a singular figure. He went in for 6 weeks at a Westboro State Hospital in 52. He had a Mervs breakdown, that was not a common thing for an athlete to admit to or to be treated for. He did it, so that's a singular distinction of his time. But he was a wonderful player, a two-time All-Star, a great center fielder. A great center fielder. People who saw him will put him up defensively with anybody. And had a long major league career, and then was a very controversial broadcaster who had the distinction of being fired by both the Cubs and the White Sox because he was too candid, too pointed in his commentary. And I remember going to Chicago in his heyday as a broadcaster, and being, everybody used to make jokes about how he was still kind of, dare I say it, crazy. He was definitely uninhibited and a very colorful character, but we're number 37, the same as Bill Lee. I wonder if there's a cosmic connection.
You've expressed on social media your love of the Beatles channel on Sirius XM Radio. I share that love with you. And people have been talking a lot about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with the 50th anniversary. From your perspective, is that the best Beatles album?
Not for me, but it's a personal taste. To me, their epic album, the peak of them, was Rubber Soul. To me, the worst song on Rubber Soul, I'll put it this way, the least good song is Norwegian Wood, and that's not a bad song. And in fact, the great instrumental version by Buddy Rich, by the way. If that's the worst song on an album, that's a hell of an album. But I know that the watershed album is Sgt. Pepper. The technical aspects of it, the imagination, the creativity, it was a step forward in their creative process. I understand that. It took them beyond the realm of popular song into something else entirely. I understand that. But for my own personal taste, if I had to pick one, I would pick Rubber Soul.
Now, I probably shouldn't be talking about this on terrestrial radio because I love the Beatles channel, but also I've become hooked a little bit. Do you listen at all to 40s Junction?
Oh, of course I do. That's my first white buttons. I got the 40s, 50s, 60s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, the Broadway channel, the Sinatra channel, 73, the Real Jazz, 67, Broadway, I said 72, and ESPN radio, which is 80, and now I've got the Beatles, which is 18, and that's my buttons on my dashboard for my satellite. I still listen to AM radio, local radio, both FM. I listen to local talk at times. But I'm predominantly in my car and a Sirius XM guy.
It's good stuff indeed. Good stuff talking to Bob Ryan, as we do quite often here on the program. Bob, as always, we appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.